Welcome to Thriving Entrepreneur with your host, Steve Kidd, third-generation minister and 30-year business coach. Listen in as amazing, world-changing authors, speakers, and coaches share their struggles and victories, and hear from best-selling authors' insight into how you, too, can live your life as a thriving entrepreneur.
This is Steve. Welcome to Thriving Entrepreneur. Thanks for being with me here today as we talk about scalable success for the ambitious underdog, which is you. I know it is. Thanks so much for being with us here. We appreciate you. I'm so glad to have you here with me. I was just telling somebody again today, you know, this is like my guilty pleasure. I love bringing Thriving Entrepreneur to you, presenting you with these amazingly cool people that have written books, done amazing things. You know, some of them you've heard of, some of you haven't, but we know that they are world changers. And I know you are too. And I want to give you, while we're listening today, some scalable tips for scalable success for you, that ambitious underdog, so that you can do the things that only you can do to take your little corner of the world, the stuff that you're doing, and help the people that you're meant to serve live their best life, to up-level them in a way that they can take their ambition and they can scale it and make it something amazing as well. I know you do that. I know you can do that. And I hope that you'll get some really great information today to help you be able to find your scalable success for you, the ambitious underdog, and learn how you can be a thriving entrepreneur. With that said, let's jump right in to our first guest here on Thriving Entrepreneur. Join me in welcoming Wendy Lyon. Hey, Wendy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing awesome, Steve. How are you?
I absolutely am doing good. Thanks. So first off, tell us a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
Well, my favorite thing to do is to turn my clients into multi-millionaires. So that's how I show up, and that's how I help them show up so they can make a positive impact in the world as well.
I love that. So what's the secret? How can you make me a multi-millionaire? Can you do it tomorrow?
Well, depending on what you have, I could do it in about the span of 2 weeks' time. That's about how long it takes. I'll give you an example. I have a client. She was in her early 40s, and she had an old 401k from a prior job that she worked. And by simply putting that into a different vehicle, it turns into $4.6
million. Wow.
Waiting for her in her future. So, yeah.
It's
doable. It's easy. It's painless. And it's possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for those of us that are self-employed and don't have a 401k with an employer, that's probably not an option for us. But talk to us more about the kind of stuff that you do for folks financially.
Well, I do a lot of what I do is just plain education, because you don't know what you don't know, right? And what you don't know can and will hurt you. One thing that I really stress with business owners, and we do a lot of key man and buy sell policies and things like that, but I also teach a two-part course on business succession planning, because most businesses never survive past two generations, let alone three. And to all you business owners out there, you don't need a 401k to become a multimillionaire. So don't write that off just yet.
Oh, good. Well, I was going to get depressed there, but I'm glad you helped us out. All right. So, you know, what's some tips, what's some tricks, what's the difference between the average person and the person who does become a multimillionaire?
Well, you know what, first of all, you need to cultivate a winning mindset. You know, if you start out any endeavor, whether it's business, personal, whatever it might be, if you start out thinking, oh, this is never going to work, I don't deserve this, I'm never going to be successful, any of that kind of nonsense, you first and foremost have to get rid of that. Start with a winning mindset. I do deserve this. I am successful. This is going to work out. I'm going to do my best. I'm going to persevere. All of those things. And tell yourself, you know, a lot of us grow up with very limiting beliefs. And how did your parents feel about money? What did they teach you about money? And what are those beliefs? And I have a show called Wealth and Wisdom, and I have a number of guests on there that do deal with exactly that. Get rid of those limiting beliefs, those mindsets, and those self-sabotaging behaviors. That's first and foremost if you're going to be successful.
I totally love that. Are there things that people typically do for trying to build wealth for themselves that you're like, you just want to pull out your hair, you're just like, oh man, I wish they wouldn't be doing that still.
There's two people that I do not care for their advice, and I prove that if you follow their advice, they will turn you into a bag lady. One of them is Dave Ramsey. Sorry, Dave, but it's true. he's very big on get out of debt, get out of debt, get out of debt. But as a business owner, you know how to leverage debt. There is such a thing as good debt. I mean, if you have a rental property and your tenant is paying that mortgage, that's not bad debt. That's good debt. That's an asset in your life. One thing that I try to tell business owners to steer clear of is don't get into too much debt where you're over your head, you're over leveraged. And now you're going to work because you owe, so off to work you go, that kind of thing. Another thing I would say is plan for the future. There are wonderful benefits. Make your employees ambassadors for your company. Bring them into the team. Help them see what their role plays in the overall big picture of things so that no matter what their position is in the company, they feel important. They feel like they're contributing, that what they do really matters.
I think that's really good advice. So, probably maybe a more direct question with current events is, we've been through some stuff, and a lot of businesses I know, it's been interesting. Some of the networking groups I'm even in, people that have had some down years the last couple of years. What do you see coming out for the future? Do you think we're headed for an economic upturn, or are things going to stay pretty much the same, or do you not get into that field, or what do you think?
There's a new sheriff in town. So there's a new administration starting, and the stock market, whether you like him or hate him, the stock market loves him. So, I mean, I forget how many records were set when he had his first term, but things are definitely going up. My portfolio has already gone up 75% just since he got elected. So I think that very good things are in store. Gold is expected to increase till 2027 and beyond. I think bitcoins and things like that are going to grow because he's a very friendly Bitcoin president, probably the largest proponent of bitcoins that in any administration. So I think those things are going to go well. Real estate, we'll have to see if we're still in a bubble or if that's going to still continue to grow. There are some signs. I mean, where I am, I'm amazed at how much our real estate continues to increase in value, but I'm in San Diego, so that can't be said throughout the country for sure.
I love that. All right. So, what are some of the pieces of, like basic starting point kind of tips that you give people that, even without working with you, they could start doing themselves to begin to increase their wealth?
Well, first of all, one thing that I would stress is that health is wealth. So don't give up your health and work 18, 20 hours a day, run yourself into the ground, come down with some chronic disease or illness, and now you have to spend all of your wealth to try to get back your health. So be kind to yourself and have some life balance there. Another thing I would say is, do try to eliminate debt. Whenever you can just save for something rather than put it on a credit card or a business line of credit or what have you, all the better. I would also, as I said, grow your business by setting SMART goals, and those are specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time bound. Set those for your business. or for your career growth. You want to have milestones where you can track your progress and celebrate those milestones. Once you achieve them, have a little celebration, give yourself a little party, take your employees out for lunch or something like that. Hey, we reached our sales goal this month. Let's, 2 weeks earlier than expected. Let's go celebrate. Do things like that. And then, expand your impact and give back and create a legacy. There is a statistic I read some years ago, and it said that businesses that give back and have an impact in their community have an average higher sales increase as much as 7% simply by doing that. So if you can shop with company A and they give to, I'll make it up, charities that help rescue animals or something like that, and company B offers the same product, but they don't, where do you think your customers are going to go? They're going to go to company A, where they know, hey, if I do business with this company, I'm also having a positive impact on the world or on animals or on children or, whatever it might be.
So let's move things more specifically to working with you. What kind of people do you work with?
I work with anyone that wants to increase their finances, that wants to create the dream, the future that they deserve and that they desire, and is willing to do something about it. I always tell people, life doesn't come with a remote control. You've got to get up and change it yourself. And there is no time like today, like the present, to do exactly that. And even if you start out small, a small change today can have a huge impact on your future. I'll give you an example. If you were 20 years old and you started saving $13 a month, 1, 3, 13, you would have $1 million by the time you were 67. And that's not even if you put it in, that's earning no interest. If you put it somewhere where it was actually working for you, it'd be a lot more than that. So remember that small changes have a big impact on your future, that I am willing to help you find that. It's always better to have a second set of eyes on what you're doing, I think, because you might have those blind spots or, things that you weren't aware of. Another thing is track your expenses and where your revenue is going. If you're not tracking your expenses, your future's going to go off the rails because you might be spending, hundreds or thousands of dollars on something that's not serving you, it's not benefiting you, it no longer serves your company or your goals. And unless you're doing all that and keeping track of those records, I've worked with some business owners, and I had one client that had gone through a divorce and he just threw everything in a box for like 2 years and had no idea where anything was, what was paid, what wasn't paid, all of that kind of stuff. So stay organized, track your expenses. Hopefully you're doing that with a good accounting program, a good bookkeeper or accountant or whatever might be doing that for you. And always remember that, success is not final. Failure is not fatal, but it's the courage to continue that counts. So when you get those bumps in the road, just persevere, pick yourself back up, dust yourself off, and move on. If you really believe in what you're doing, you're going to be able to withstand those curveballs that business or the economy or other things might throw at you and still get to the place where you want to be.
That's amazing. I love it. So, tell us, where do we go? How can we work with you?
Go to the Financial Lion, Lyon. It's my last name, thefinanciallion.com/schedule, and get on my calendar, and we'll have a financial strategy session that will leave you feeling empowered, more knowledgeable. Probably you'll feel better because you've taken a positive step in the right direction to make sure that your finances and your future is on track and it's going to turn out the way that you dreamed it would.
I love that. Well, before I let you go, Wendy, give us some words of encouragement, that no matter where we are financially, things can get better.
I will encourage you with my own story. My husband and I both lost our incomes the same day twice since we've been married, and we have come back from that. and secured our retirement. We'll have more income in retirement than we make right now. So if we could do that starting with nothing, imagine what we could do together starting from something. So don't give up.
I love it. Well, Winnie, thank you so much for spending some time with us here on the show today.
You're so welcome. Thanks so much for having me, Steve.
Now, if after that you're not already in the space where you want to work with Wendy, I don't know what's going on. I mean, seriously, if you could find a way to take your 401k and turn it from whatever it is or isn't and make yourself a multimillionaire here in the next couple of weeks or next couple of months, how would you not want to do that? Talk about scalable success. And I know you're ambitious, and I know you're doing the hard work, and you're doing the things that only you can do. And that is such a great program for helping you find that success that you deserve. You, the ambitious underdog, and more importantly, you, the thriving entrepreneur. With that said, we're going to jump right in to our next guest here on Thriving Entrepreneur. Join me in welcoming Mike Andis. Hey, Mike, how you doing today?
Fantastic. Thanks for having me on, Steve.
Thanks so much for being here today. First off, tell us a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
Yeah, so basically, I started mowing grass when I was 11 years old, and that really was a what allowed me to pay my way through college. I started college when I was really young, at 13 years old, and I thought I was becoming a doctor. And so I figured, hey, I might as well get this thing started and get college done as quickly as possible. At 18 years old, before going to get my MD at medical school, I ended up dropping out. And basically, that's when I started Augusta Lawn Care, because that's really all I knew what to do is in terms of mowing grass. It's all I had done. And so that's when I started Augusta Lawn Care. And now fast forward about 10 years, we have about 170 locations around the world and that are franchised.
Wow, I love that. So, do you have a specialty type of lawns that you work on, or is it mostly residential or businesses, or what do you do?
Yeah, mostly residential. The commercial side is usually a little more price sensitive, whereas having a premium product on the residential side, we can usually differentiate ourselves a little bit more from the competition. Whereas commercial contracts and commercial maintenance specifically is usually looking for the lowest bidder, whether it be, HOAs or commercial projects, et cetera.
So, what is it that differentiates your company from the competitors?
Yeah, I would say like the thing that most residential customers are willing to pay more for is like the speed of delivery. So, for example, if someone calls Augusta, 24/7, we answer the phone. We use AI. We have agents that are on staff if the AI can't handle the call, 24/7. And so that alone allows us to be like get to the estimate as fast as possible. And on all of our estimates, we're doing it over the phone, or if they're on our website, they're able to actually just check out and get their instant pricing from from online. And so many times when it comes to home services, we find that the business that gets the customer the estimate first is the one that wins the deal. And so really the speed to lead, getting to the customer and actually getting the quote to them is many times a really good indicator in terms of who actually wins the job. And so we're really optimizing around that instead of the price discounting and kind of, basically undercutting the competition.
So, how did you make the leap from you mowing lawns yourself to having multiple people working for you to being, a franchise?
Yeah, like I think I wouldn't say it's for everyone. Like knowing what stress you want to have, like when you're working by yourself, the stress is much more physical because you're doing the work yourself. And then as you begin to grow and get employees, the next skill that's required is that of a manager, hiring, firing, training, screening applicants, etc. And then as the business grows continually past that, especially as a, to your point, we franchise, like the skill that's required for that and the owner is that of an architect. So labor, manager, architect. There's different stages of the business. And at each stage, there's a different stress. At the beginning, you have physical stress. As you're beginning to become a manager, stepping out of daily, actually producing revenue, many times the stress you have is financial because your profit margins get collapsed. You are now an overhead cost to the business instead of a revenue producing team member. And then as you become an architect, really, for myself, even now as a franchisor, every single day there's something wrong happening in the business. Customers are mad, an employee is gone. Something is happening across 170 locations that is, bad. And so that becomes psychological stress. And so I think for most people, the distinction is not a matter of is this stressful or not, but what type of stress do I want to deal with and am I capable of handling? And that's the size of business we should grow to.
I love that. What do you know now that you wish you would have known way back when you first started the business?
I think knowing which stage of business I'm in those three roles of an owner, and not trying to be something that I'm not. And so I find a lot of times, myself included, that when I first got started as a laborer, I was trying to think like an architect. I was trying to think about systems and procedure and working quote unquote on the business because that's what I heard I was supposed to do. I was thinking about acquisitions. I was thinking about strategy. When in reality, at the size of, 0 to 200,000, the skill of a laborer is all that's required to grow the business. And so focusing on that skill that is required to conquer the current stage that you're at is probably the flaw I see most people have to struggle with. And that's what I did too. And the same is true vice versa. There's companies that are doing, a million plus in revenue. The owner should really be that of an architect in terms of their role, stepping back, empowering their managers, creating systems and procedures, thinking about strategy. But instead, they're out in the field working with their crew still. And although that some people would deem that as, leading by example, ultimately they're out of position. And so I think in general, being the wrong thing to the business at the time that it needs an owner to act in a certain way and be it in a certain role is many times the reason why most small businesses fail.
I love that. So, what kind of a person is the perfect franchisee for you? Is it somebody that wants to more work and be a worker, or is it, a person that's more of the architect type?
It really depends on how much capital they bring to the table. Like, if you want to start off immediately from that of an architect, we have what we call an executive model, where you actually get six locations from day one. You're going to hire a regional manager and six general managers to run the locations. Usually, that person needs a minimum of $500,000 or $600,000 to really do that effectively. Now, if someone's just getting started and they only have, say, $50,000 to $100,000, they can still join. They're just going to have to start in that first stage of growth, that labor phase, and probably be in the field for the first year. And as they scale up, then move into the manager role and then move into the architect role over the course of several years. And typically, our model is, if you're starting from zero, the goal is to grow to $500,000 in annual revenue over the course of 3 years. And it's again, assuming you don't have a ton of capital, you can't immediately scale and pour money on marketing. And so once you hit 500,000, our goal then is actually to stop buying trucks, stop hiring employees, optimize for profit by raising prices every single time you hit capacity. And if you do that over the course of 3 years, our model is to hit $800,000 in annual revenue and profit $200,000 a year.
I love that. So let's talk in a little bit more detail specifically then about who are you looking for? For the person that's listening that's been looking for the franchise, why would working in, with your company be the right one for them?
Yeah, I think as a broader scope in terms of franchise versus independent, it's really a matter of like what are you looking for from the business. If you're wanting full autonomy, if you're wanting to be able to make every decision, if you're wanting to test and do test runs, do trial and error, split test things yourself, and want your hands in every single aspect of the business, you probably shouldn't be a franchisee. The franchisor does restrict certain freedoms based upon the fact that they've done it hundreds, if not thousands, of times in the past. And they should have a decent track record and data as to what is going to work best for the business and for the model they've built. And so I think for someone broadly thinking about franchising, it's a matter of like, are you willing to give up the entrepreneurial freedoms associated with choosing every single aspect of your business in exchange for the reliability of returns and the dependability of the outcome that comes with the franchise because they've done it so many more times and they've seen what works and they've seen what has not worked. And having trust in that franchisor is a key ingredient. And so if you don't have that and you want entrepreneurial freedoms, I'd say for most people, they probably should not then be a franchisee. I think the ideal franchisee is someone who realizes that the constraints given by the franchisor are really for their best interest. The same way that you put a dog in a kennel if you're going to take it on a flight across the ocean. Like, it's a constraint. It's not going to like getting inside the kennel, but it's ultimately for the safety of the dog in order to reach its destination. And so if your destination is being to have a successful business, from a statistical standpoint, having a franchisor that puts you in certain constraints is actually the right thing to do. But it's whether or not you want that for your business. And I think in terms of Augusta specifically, I think the community around the franchise is probably the thing that differentiates us. We don't have a royalty. We have a flat monthly fee. So it incentivizes someone to stay profitable and not just keep growing their top line revenue. I don't have the perverse incentive of telling franchisees to spend a bunch of money on marketing or get salespeople, because ultimately I'm incentivized by them just staying in business. And so the model that we've kind of built is something that I, as a franchisee of Anytime Fitness before becoming a franchisor, really just kind of figure out what makes a great franchise, and what as do I as a franchisee like, and what do I not like, and we just try to kind of pare back what things would make it most sticky to the franchisees.
Perfect. So for the person who wants to work with you, where would they go? How do they, how does the process work?
Yeah, just online, you can go to augustalaundryservices.com/franchises. There's a whole bunch of details on there. You can book a call with the sales team from there as well. But yeah, also just on my social media, Mike Andes, on YouTube. We do a bunch of turnarounds and things like that on YouTube, just other businesses, other home service businesses. So that's a good place to start.
And you said that you have opportunities pretty much basically worldwide.
Yeah, so mostly in the US, but we also have quite a few in Canada, and then we just opened up in Australia just a couple months ago, our first location. So just expanding there now.
That's really cool. All right, so before I let you go, give us a piece of advice. After having been in business and been successful in business, obviously you're doing well enough for your mom would be giving you heck for not having finished becoming a doctor. What kind of encouragement can you give people who are thinking about starting their own business?
I think the thing that I'd be careful of is like following what is most popular. I think right now it's AI. A couple of years ago it was probably meme coins, and Bitcoin's back in fashion now, but typically things that come in fashion go out of fashion relatively quickly. And so the reason I'm so bullish on home services is because the grass will continue to grow, the windows will continually need cleaning, and the roofs will still need repaired. And so if you don't know what business to get into, I really like home services because the demand for our services are always required. And I run a software company as well at Copilot CRM, but like AI could wipe us out in 10 years. It might look completely different. I happen to believe that grass will still continue to grow in 10 years. And so offering a service that is inherently going to be sticky in terms of demand and isn't going away is a great place to get started and learn the skill of marketing and hiring and sales. And those fundamental business principles will hold true regardless of what industry you move on to in the future.
Perfect. And give us your URL one more time.
This is MikeAndes.com.
All right, Mike. Well, thank you so much for what you're doing in the world. And I hope that people, if they're looking for somebody to mow their lawn or a franchise opportunity, that they'll go to MikeAndes.com and have a further conversation with you.
Thanks so much, Steve. I appreciate it. You have a good one.
If you have a house, you have a lawn. And maybe you have time, and maybe it's even one of the things you enjoy doing, getting on the lawn more, but a lot of people don't. And then there's the communities or the people who don't have the physical capability to do it. There is always going to be a need for that ambitious entrepreneur that wants to go out, make a huge impact and a big difference in the world, but also be able to really show up for people and help them. Have their house that outside of it look really nice. And there's nothing like having a good landscaper that comes in and just takes care of your yard for you. And you can show up after work and be like, oh, look how great the lawn looks. And there is a lot of scalable success in that as a franchise for you. That ambitious entrepreneur that's inside of you. You may feel like an underdog, but you're already an overcomer and you've got this. So, with that said, let's take a look at that, but also let's continue our process here as we jump into our next guest here on Thriving Entrepreneur. Let's go. Join me in welcoming John Hannum. Hey, John, how you doing today?
Doing great, Steve. Thanks.
Thank you so much for being here with us. First off, tell us a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
Well, I am a fractional CFO. I was used to be a corporate CFO by nature, and basically I transported myself into fractions and started doing that for many small companies. Now I run a fractional CFO firm where we try and bring the power of big company finance to small companies that need it most.
So, for people who aren't familiar with the concept, how does a fractional CFO work?
Fractional CFO, well, in order to answer the question, we have to go through what a CFO is, and it's different than your CPA. It's different than some of the small business resources available, because it's usually only available to larger companies. A CFO is the person that runs accounting and finance, so they make sure that your books are nice and clean and that your financial reporting is good, and they help you with your budgeting, planning, all the financial planning and analysis that's needed. And your financial strategy. They help you get where you're going to go. So a fractional CFO just does that same thing on a smaller basis. So for multiple companies rather than just slaving away at one company.
And what are the advantages for a company of using them fractionally as opposed to just having their own in-house CFO?
Well, the main advantage definitely is cost. CFOs, I don't know many CFOs who don't drive really nice cars and want a fourth vacation house. So, that's really inaccessible to small business. So the main advantage is cost. And, by employing somebody only a fraction of the time for the time that you really need them to help run your small business, it certainly saves on cost, and it allows that CFO to make the salary that's commensurate with their experience, what they could get in a larger company.
Perfect. So most people, and you kind of explained it a little bit, but let's go a little deeper into it. Most people are familiar with what their bookkeeper does or what their yearly accountant does for them, or, when they're cheating, what QuickBooks does for them. But what kind of things does a CFO bring to the table that, maybe we don't even know that we probably do need, especially as small businesses?
Yeah, this is the central question for everything. The CFO doesn't replace your bookkeeper or accountant. They're not going to do your journal entries, and they're not going to necessarily think about your tax return or do your tax return unless they also offer that service. Our CFOs mostly focus on operational goals and operational metrics. So we want to think about the operations of the business and help you with the finances to understand that and move it forward. Strategic decision making might be in there, building a budget or a plan, deciding whether to hire people or fire people, deciding what equipment to buy. All of those are good decisions that you probably wouldn't call your CPA or your bookkeeper for. There's something that a CFO would help you do. Some of them are more, analytical and kind of a line level in nature, but they're totally different than what your CPA is giving you. The CPA thinks, how does this impact the financials, and how do the financials go into a tax return? Because they're going to primarily be thinking about the primary service that they give you, which is taxes. The CFO is thinking always about strategy, bringing something to the table about financial strategy and helping you think about things through the lens of numbers. But it's more about running your business, and they're very complementary to bookkeeping. You have to have a good bookkeeper and a good CPA, I think, to have a good CFO.
When you're talking to small businesses, what are the kind of things that you would love for them to already know about what you do before you get into the conversation that most of the time they don't really know?
Most of what we do is educate people that we exist. So that is one of the things that I try and kind of evangelize out in the world. We talk about what finance is, and bring finance out into out of the boardroom and into the store, into the business. So I don't think that there's a specific thing that people need to know, only that finance is important, and it does, it's paying attention to your books is important to helping you run your business. It's not just something that you shove off to your accountant once a year and don't think about. So where we meet entrepreneurs, though, and what we think about each entrepreneur, we have to figure out what they do and don't know, what they do and don't value, and help them to get where they need to go to understand things. They do have to come into finance world a little bit and understand some terminology, and they get more and more comfortable with that as they go through the months of looking at the financials. But you don't have to come entirely into the world, because we're here to provide that guide and that translation for you, helping you understand what the numbers mean, what they could be impacted by, if we take some business decisions, how things should work from an operational perspective with your numbers if you follow the right path. But we meet every entrepreneur where they are, to answer your question. They don't have to know anything. we figure out what they do and don't know and get them where they need to be.
The educational part of that is so important because one of the most important things for your business is, you know, knowing and understanding your numbers. And one of the biggest things that most business, you know, the leaders, the directors, the owners of the company don't really understand really is how their business is, what's the difference between cash flow and profit and all those different kind of things. So super important. And I mentioned a couple of things, but what is the thing that you find yourself teaching people on that they really don't know as much about as you wish they did?
You know, it's always different. We support a lot of different industries. So it's amazing to me, you know, how many entrepreneurs don't kind of understand the accounting lingo within their own industry. Construction, for example, you know, everybody thinks cash basis because that's what your tax return is done in. But thinking about things in an accrual basis, you know, what did you really make and what is WIP or work in process that kind of evens out your earnings so that you don't think you're making 13% one month and 86% another month. You know, these things are all mechanics of accrual or gap accounting that we bring to the table and try and educate people on. So there's not necessarily one thing, but just the idea that your numbers are useful to you and should be presented in a way that show your true earnings, not just your cash earnings, to me is an aha moment when people realize, oh, this is why we're making money or not making money. When you just look at your tax return or your cash basis financials, you really can't tell much from them. When you look at a good set of accrual financials, you can tell so much and help you guide your business towards more profitability.
So what's it like to work with you? You know, where does the process start?
It's a good question. What's it like to work with me? Some people have called it fantastic, others challenging. we always start with figuring out where an entrepreneur is on their journey and what their goals are. My company, PPS Solutions, our value statement is that we support the owner's vision of success. I don't know any owners that don't want to earn more money. So most of the time that involves profitability, but you know, we have to figure out where you want to go with your business before we can help you get there. So the roadmap really does look like education first and learning. That education is in two ways. We have to learn all about your business and understand what it is. We also have to educate you on what finance is and how we're going to interface. And then we can really start a profitable relationship of budgeting, planning, analysis, rinse and repeat, that allows you to run your business more and more profitably on a monthly and yearly basis. It can sometimes be a long journey. People get frustrated with finance and the fact that we don't have a template that can help them to profitability within 30 days. Really, it really depends on every single business and every single roadmap is different. I love living for the aha moment though, when people realize the power of what we're doing and can see it in the actions that they took in running their business with a better profit.
I love that. Absolutely love getting to be in conversations with people who do the things that many people don't enjoy doing. And it's kind of their jam, you know, it's the thing that they really love doing. So that's super cool. Tell us, where does a person need to go to start the process of interacting with you?
Well, our website's always the best place. It's ppsfinance.com. PPS stands for People, Process, and Systems, which I do believe in that order are super required for a good company. So ppsfinance.com, there's a way to book time with us there. There's a way to contact us through email. My direct email is johnjohn@ppsfinance.com. We're pretty accessible, and I absolutely love taking meetings to talk to people about finance. So if anybody has any questions, even if you don't think that a CFO would be right for you, if anybody has questions, I take meetings all the time and can really help people get hooked up with the services they need. And, you know, hopefully some of the time that's a CFO service so that our business can also grow.
I totally love that. Well, before I let you go, give us some words of encouragement that the somewhat arduous tasks sometimes of dealing with our finances is something that can become actually an effective and empowered part of your company.
Words of encouragement. So this is a great time for that. Recording around the beginning or end of the year is a great time to kind of focus on finances as well. So one of the things that I would really encourage people to do is to think about what their goals are for the year, much like you have your New Year's resolutions. Whenever you start, doesn't have to be the beginning of the year, but it's a great time to kind of focus and say, what do I want to do? And then absolutely keep track and mark your progress towards those goals throughout the year. That is, I think, the most powerful thing in finance. Even if you do it yourself without a CFO, even if you do it with your CPA, write down the plan, put some numbers to the plan, and watch yourself go to those numbers as your company grows. It's magic.
I love it. Well, John, thanks so much for being on the show with us here today.
Thank you so much, Steve. It's been a pleasure.
Just because your company may be small, or even it's a one-man band, doesn't mean you can't have a high-powered, really shows you how your money is or isn't working CFO that's working for your firm, and using somebody fractionally and having them come in and spend an hour a month or an hour a week or whatever. They can show you insights into the financial aspects of your company that you would have never thought of. People like that just do some really amazing things, and you will absolutely be glad. And you'll see just how scalable your success can be. And you might find yourself just like Underdog. For those of you that are old enough to remember that cartoon, you may find yourself flying in that ambitious success that is yours because your fractional CFO helped you be able to find it as well and live as a thriving entrepreneur. Here's our next guest. Join me in welcoming Brian Driscoll. Hey, Brian, how are you doing today?
Hey Steve, how you doing? I'm doing well, thanks.
I'm really good, thanks. First off, tell us a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
Yeah, so I'm 44 years old from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I own a digital marketing company. I have three sons. They're 13, 10, and 9. Married, and I just wrote a book called The Goodness Game. So I do a lot of different stuff in the business and then try to make an impact as well.
Tell me more about your book. What is the book, The Business Game, about?
Yeah, so it's called The Goodness Game. So basically, about, I'd say back in 1998, I ran away. I was all pissed at my parents, right? Ran away to Florida and I took a Greyhound. Do you want the short version or long version? I'll ask you that.
Oh, go ahead and give me the long version.
All right, cool. Okay, so here's what happened. I was pissed at my parents, like 18 years old. I'm like, hey, I'm running away. I went to the Greyhound station in Pittsburgh. I just went down there. I'm like, hey, give me the next bus leaving. So I literally, Orlando is the next bus. So I remember I hopped on that bus. Have you ever ridden a Greyhound, by the way?
I mean,
Greyhound.
it was in the 1980s, but yes, I have.
Okay. Yeah. So I took a Greyhound. I met some characters on the way down. And Greyhound doesn't go directly to Florida. So you got to hop on all these different, take all these different things. So it took me like 24 hours. And I didn't know where I was going. And I didn't have you didn't have Uber back then, didn't have cell phones. So on the last stretch of the Greyhound, there's a couple there and they're like, hey, what are you doing? Because it's almost like close to midnight. I'm like, I don't really know. I'm gonna try to find a hotel. So what they did is they took me back to their place. And I remember we called around to try to find a motel. We called out of the Yellow Pages. They had them back then. So what happened was I found a hotel, it's $25 a night, and I had about $200 to my name total. So, and my plan was to go get a job. And so I went to a Publix, tried getting a job, and turns out like if you don't have an address, it's hard to get a job. Like people don't hire you, right? So I was running out of money and I went to one of the places, like the job labor pool places where you just go and get paid the same day. So I went there, was working and still ran out of money. So I was going to sleep at a Greyhound station that night. I was walking through somewhat of a ghetto type of neighborhood, walking to the Greyhound to sleep, and some lady pulled up beside me in a black tracker and just said, hey, it doesn't look like you belong here. Where are you going? So I told her my story. She took me back to her house, put me up with her family for a couple nights, and spotted me a couple $100, got me a job. And that's where the Goodness Game was started by her helping me way back then. I'm just started paying it forward. Like what happened was she gave me $300 for a hotel room and I was never able to pay her back. So I just started paying it forward and that's where I'm at now.
Well, I love that. So leap forward to here, and tell us about some of the really amazing things that have happened in your life.
Yeah, so some good things that have happened in my life. I've had a lot of things. I'm pretty blessed. I've gotten punched in the face a lot, which some people say is a bad thing. I kind of like that because I got to experience a lot of bad things, which in turn, once you get through them, you get strong. I own a business now, published this book, which is pretty cool, to inspire others to be kind and like put some positive energy out there. And well, yeah, that's basically about it. Like, there's all kinds of good stuff going on.
And so, what kind of things does your business do?
So I do digital marketing. So what we do is we generate leads on a national basis for real estate investors. So basically what I'm doing, I have a matchmaking company. We find people that want to sell their house and we match them with people that buy houses.
Okay, well, that's super awesome.
Yeah,
All right.
that's pretty cool.
So for the person that's listening that has a house they want to sell or is looking to buy a house, how does the process work?
Yeah, so if somebody has a house, they would go to tryhomematch.com. They fill out a form, and then we just connect them with an investor that wants to buy their property cash.
That's amazing. How close, when somebody's buying your property cash, how close do you get to, what would you would get if you put it out on the regular market and that kind of thing?
It's usually a little bit less. So normally people that are trying to sell for cash, their properties probably wouldn't make it on the market because an agent wouldn't take it. Like we see a lot of times, like it's hoarder houses that are really beat up, things like that. So they usually would sell roughly about the same amount after commissions. If you have a pretty house, it's definitely worth just selling it on the market. Selling to a cash buyer is mainly the ones that are problems, like they got bad foundations, they just got junk in them. You inherited a home, you can't afford to fix it, that kind of stuff.
Okay, well, that's really cool. And so most of the investors that you work with, you already have in place, and you have a pretty good network of investors around the country.
Yeah, we pretty have most investors in most of the major metros.
So tell us more about the other kind of things that you're doing. So you take a certain percentage of every one of the deals you make and you pay that forward, or is it just when you run into something, you help when you can, or how do you decide who and where and what to give?
Yeah, so here's basically what I look at. Have you ever seen the movie Pay It Forward?
Yes, I have.
So I was always inspired by the Pay It Forward movie. So say, for example, I ran away, went to Florida, right? When I came back like 10 years later, I always wanted to pay it forward and try to make a difference. So, and I wanted to see, can I prove the model? Like, does it actually make sense? Like everyone's like, you can make a difference, ripple effect, all that. Like, I'm wondering, does that actually work? So what I did is I picked a random city and it happened to be Chicago. And I went on Craigslist and I posted an ad that said, hey, I'll come to your city, help you out, no strings attached. In exchange, I want you to pay it forward. And I got bombarded with messages. Like some people are like, hey, this is great. Other people are like, hey, you're nuts. But I had five people respond to that message that actually needed something. And the funny thing is, they didn't need money. So one guy's name was Mike. He just needed a ride to pick up a car. One girl just needed help taking down a swing set. One guy needed a car battery. That's the only one that cost money. One guy needed help gutting a bathroom. And then one guy worked in a homeless shelter and they just needed clothes. So what I did was on Friday, it was a Friday, I drove to Chicago, probably took like, I don't know, 12 hours or something, went and helped these people out and came back on Sunday. So it was just a weekend trip. And I recorded it on an old school camcorder. When I came back, I hopped on Windows Movie Maker, pieced it together just to like show what happened, tossed it on YouTube, and a video went viral. So I looked at that and I'm like, okay, this makes sense that you can do one act and have a compound effect. And the interesting thing was I had like major news media hitting me up, doing stories on this. So it proved the model. It's like, okay, you can do one thing to make a difference. So now I basically just keep my eyes open for when I see something that fits my like helping style. And I try to just step up when I can and say yes, you know what I mean?
That is so incredibly cool. So, for people that get the book, do you teach them how to be able to do that same thing, or What are you helping people learn in your book?
Yeah, sure. So a couple things. Like I think a lot of people want to, I think everybody wants to make a difference and like help out. A lot of people don't know how, or they think you have to do something really big and really grandiose, like make a nonprofit or something like that. So what we break down is we break it down number one into some roles. And then number two, find out your helping style. So for example, a helping style, like me, I'm a financial helper or I'm like a connector or a thinker, right? So I'm not the guy to call when you need your grass cut, things like that. I can do it. It's just I'm not built for that. Same as like some people are built, they love cleaning the house. I'm not that. So in the book, what we do is we break it down. It's like, okay, find out what your helping style is, and then go do that. Don't try to fit your like a square into a round hole. You know what I mean? And then second thing is I break down into like looking at different energy levels. So, and not like the out there in the world kind of energy. I'm thinking more along the lines of me cleaning a house takes energy away from me. It like drains me. I don't like doing that. But if we're talking business or brainstorming, things like that, that gives me energy. On the other hand, my wife would hate doing what I do. So it's like once you find out what you're really built for and what you can do, then do that because it's not going to be a drain or it's not going to be like work. And just put yourself in those types of situations and then avoid the other ones. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, I totally do. So the book's available on Amazon and all the regular places a person can get a book.
Yeah, you can go on Amazon, all those platforms. You can take the tests on goodnessgame.com. You can go on there, it's free. Find out what your helping style is, download the energy audit, all that kind of stuff as well.
That's amazing. Well, so what's next? I mean, you put out the book, you've got some cool things. What are you hoping people want to engage with you on and you're hoping to do with your interview here today?
Yeah, so what I'm hoping for is I'm hoping people listen to this or find the book and they read it and they find, you know what, this makes sense to me on it helps them find out like what's their helping style or what's their way to make a difference because everybody's got a way to do something. So it's just going to direct, okay, here's my thing that I can do. So I'm hoping that they would read that and it would click in their head. It's like, okay, you know what, that makes sense for me. Like it makes sense. Hey, I want to work with kids or I like working in the homeless shelter or it's just like hey, I don't want to do any of that, but I'm cool paying for the guy's coffee behind me at McDonald's. You know what I mean? So it kind of like let people find out what fits them the best.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it when you go to a McDonald's or a Starbucks or something like that, and you can get a train of people going, and you get almost to that point where, the person's going to feel guilty if they don't pay for the person behind them.
Right. You know what's crazy? I just went on, it was right before Christmas, to a pizza shop. I was picking up pizza for my family and it was like $85. It wasn't even cheap. I go in there and I'm like, hey, someone paid for your meal. It's like, it's cool because I'm usually not on the receiving end. It's like, yeah, people are just doing that out there. I'm like, boy, that makes you feel good, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think my favorite one I ever did, well, I have two. They're kind of neck and neck with each other. One time I drove through, I think it was like a Taco Bell or someplace like that, where there is no option for tipping. And I just handed the girl at the window, I handed her $5. Totally didn't know what to do with it. I was like, she's like, what's this? I'm like, that's for you.
Yeah.
I'm sure still to this day, she's either doesn't know what to do with it or she just gave it to the manager and didn't end up knowing.
Well,
But yeah.
and here's the thing too. It's like you never know because like $5 might not be a ton to you. She could be having like a super crappy day, and that one act right there just made a difference to her, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I remember one time during COVID, I had to go to the drugstore to pick up a medication and I just there was like three people, I mean working, and there was nobody else in the whole store. And I handed them a 20 and I just said, hey, lunch is on me. I mean, I really appreciate your being here when I need to come into a place when we're not supposed to leave home at all, so
Yeah. And that's cool. And that's like kind of what the Goodness Game is about. Stuff like that. It's like small things anybody can do, you know?
oh yeah. Yeah, it's the most fun to try to be able to find, the weird and unusual and random things and places where people don't tip. I mean,
Right.
most of us tip when we're getting a meal or if there's a, if the little Apple Pay has a, what percentage tip, we're going to typically choose something on there. I mean, I know there's a few people that still say zero, but We won't talk about those people, or maybe we'll talk nasty about them later.
Yeah, you know what? You know what's funny too? Talking about creative ways. So back in the day, this was probably, I don't know, 15 years ago, I was going, it was pouring down rain here in Pittsburgh, right? And I stopped at the dollar store and I forget what I was getting, but they had a bucket of umbrellas there. They were dollar piece. So I grabbed them. I called my buddy Sean. I'm like, hey, let's go mess around. We drove around downtown looking for people that were like stranded waiting for their bus. Just hopped out, gave them an umbrella and bailed. You know, just like interesting things you can mess around, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's a lot of fun. Well, I encourage everybody, I mean, find out what your giving style is. Find out what really lights you up. And then do it without thought of what's in it for you. Just do it. I mean, not even for the jolt and the juice that you get from it, but just because you know what it does for somebody else's life. Because you're absolutely right. You never know when handing $5 or even a dollar bill to somebody is a night and day difference in their world, even though it felt like nothing to you.
Right. And yeah, even like just helping someone out too. People need to know they care. Like even people, like people don't think about this. I have a friend who does a lot with the homeless, and sometimes people just want to know they exist, like that you see them. Like just remembering their names is one guy said was really important, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That makes total sense. Well, give us your URL and what kind of things people can do to interact with you and where to go.
Yeah, sure thing. Yeah, it's goodnessgame.com. You can just go on there, take the helpers test. You can download some cool stuff on there. You can go to Amazon, just look up Goodness Game. And yeah, I'd be interested. Yeah, if you check out the book, shoot me an email. Let me know what you think.
Perfect. I love it. Well, Brian, thanks for all you're doing in the world. And thank you so much for being a guest here on the show today.
Hey, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Got a house, need to sell it. Are you a realtor looking for houses that need to be sold? What a great matchmaking service. But also, then, what a great book, The Goodness Game. How can you do more goodness in the world? I know that might not be good English, but it's really a powerful thing. What can you do to scale your success, not just because you want to put more zeros in your bank account, and I don't mean that by no money, but I mean by adding zeros behind the other numbers in your bank account, but so that you can really scale your success and make an impact. I see your ambition. I know how powerful you are, and I know the difference that you can and will make. And having the elements that you can put together to create scalable success for you can make you go from underdog to Superman in one fell swoop because you are uniquely brilliant. You absolutely were created for a purpose. And oh, the world, we need you. We need your ambition. We need you to scale your success. We need you to show up in this wonderful day called today as the best version of you that you can be today to get it done. To do the things that only you can do and live as a thriving entrepreneur. I hope you saw some really great insights into what you can do. And even if the things aren't exactly what you do or you need, it gave you some ideas on what your ambitious underdog can do to scale their success too, and to live every day of your life as a thriving entrepreneur. I hope until we're together again next time, you have a great week.
Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today. If you want to get your question answered, send an email to questions@wehelpyouthrive.com. We look forward to you joining us again next time.
Hi, my name is Steve Kidd. I am a third generation minister, an international best-selling author of multiple books, and I help people write, publish, and market their books to bestseller. In fact, there are literally thousands of people that have used the system that I created to be able to write, publish, and market their books, and now they're best-selling authors, and you're next. I just wanted to come on for a minute, say hi to you, tell you a little bit about me, introduce myself, and tell you I know the world is waiting on your message, and I would be so honored to be part of sharing your message with the world. Go to AskSteveKid.com and schedule a time to talk today.